This is a podcast from ABC Local Radio Overnights. I'm Rod Quinn. A recent episode of the SBS TV series Who Do You Think You Are featured the Australian rugby league legend Mal Meninga, and it focused very much on the life of his great-grandfather, Edward Meninga. On the program, Mal Meninga traced his heritage back to Vanuatu in the mid-19th century, or the New Hebrides, as the island group were known then. And we heard about how his great-grandfather came from Vanuatu to Queensland as part of the blackbirding trade, which was essentially a slave trade. Even though Edward Meninga chose to come to Queensland, it's a fascinating story how he did that, that was not the case for many men, women and children in the islands at that time, who were taken against their will and forced to work in the Queensland cane fields. It was known as blackbirding, and it is a pretty dark part of Australia's history. To find out more about it, we're going to talk to Imelda Miller. She is from the Queensland Museum, Assistant Curator, Pacific and Torres Strait Islander Studies, and she was featured talking to Mal Meninga on Who Do You Think You Are? Imelda, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Rod.
Firstly, the term blackbirding. Some people use that term, others find it offensive. What is it, and should we use that term?
Yeah, so, Rod, in the beginning of the recruitment, as they say, of islanders to work in the sugar industry in Queensland, in the early years, islanders are referred to as being blackbirded, which is they were tricked or kidnapped to actually get onto the ships and then come to Queensland. As far as should we use that word, past generations they believe, and because, you know, their history from their ancestors, that they were blackbirded. And it's definitely part of the, you know, today the Australian South Sea Islander community is definitely part of the history. So, and is more talked about today than it has ever been before.
Okay. When did it start?
The first islanders arrived in Queensland back in 1863 into the Logan area, which is around here, around the Brisbane area. And they came on a boat called Don Juan, and it arrived into the Moreton Bay area.
And as it began in 1863, I think it ended in 1901 with the establishment of the Commonwealth government. It lasted for about 40 years.
Yeah, that's correct. And during that time, there was, you know, islanders were coming here and they were moving backwards and forwards, you know, from Australia to the islands. They were on indentured labour contracts, basically, but the conditions weren't very nice. But they were coming backwards and forwards from the islands, some coming back and returning to work on other contracts, while others, you know, are just returning back to the islands at that stage.
So it went on for about 40 years. How many people were involved, do we think? How many people were taken either against their will or chose to come from the South Sea Islands, the Pacific Islands, to Queensland?
There's over 50,000 islanders that were involved in this trade, human trade. And, you know, and there were men, women and children. So... involved in this labour trade, yeah.
Now, Mal Meninga's great-great-grandfather came from Vanuatu, or the New Hebrides then, and now called Vanuatu. What other islands were involved? Where did these people come from?
So predominantly they came from Vanuatu, or the New Hebrides, as you said, and the Solomon Islands. But they were also coming from New Caledonia, Fiji, the Gilbert Islands, Kiribati, and then like New Ireland and Milne Bay provinces of Papua New Guinea even.
So they are called South Sea Islanders. These days we'd call them Pacific Islanders. Is that right?
Well, today the community like to be called and are recognised as Australian South Sea Islanders. The descendants, I should say, are right. Recognised as Australian South Sea Islanders.
So why the difference? What's the difference, say, between South Sea Islanders and Pacific Islanders?
So the South Sea Islanders, the community refer to as the original islanders who came to Australia, and Australian South Sea Islanders are the descendants of these people.
Okay.
Who are born here in Australia today.
Right. Yeah.
for me, looking at it, even though you say they were paid, they're on contracts, and many of them were paid very little indeed, it amounts to little more than slavery. Is that a way of looking at it, that people, in fact, sailed off to these islands, took people prisoner, brought them back to Australia and forced them to work very hard work in the cane fields and paid them little or nothing? Were they slaves?
You know, the conditions were akin to slave-like labour. The pay was very little. Basically, you know, pretty much nothing. And the conditions that people had to live under were horrible conditions. You know, they were on rations. Where they lived, you know, wasn't great. And then and people in the community talk of this, some of their ancestors being treated like slaves and being sold like slaves, basically, when they came off the ships. And, you know, and other people deny these kind of histories. And some histories were okay, but, yeah, there are stories of that. And I think that's the history that isn't spoken about much.
So what we're talking about, I think what Mal was saying, or what the experts were saying on the program, was that maybe they'll pay £6 a year, which doesn't seem like a lot of money for all the hard work, working 12 hours a day, 6 or 7 days a week in the cane field. And even those who might have been on so-called contracts, you know, they were hardly in a position to read and understand and sign that contract.
That's correct. And many of the places where you see people signing their names, it's either with a fingerprint or with a cross. In some of the records that I've seen to date. So, and I suppose that is the thing about this kind of labour, is that how much understanding did people have, and, you know, when they came out here, about the conditions that they would be living under.
Imelda Miller is our guest from Queensland Museum, talking about the process, or what went on with what is called blackbirding, especially in the late 19th century in Queensland. So, how organised was it? Did we have ships going backwards and forwards between Queensland and Vanuatu and other places, just collecting people and bringing them back? Is that what happened?
Yeah, there were ships. And later on in the part, there was legislation to control the trade of islanders. So there were certain conditions that islanders had to have aboard ships, and there was contracts that needed to be entered into, what we call indentured contracts. Bringing people into different ports in Queensland, starting at Brisbane and going, you know, Maribyrnong, Bundaberg, Mackay, Townsville and Cairns.
Were they only working in the cane fields? Where else were they working?
They're mainly working in the cane fields until the establishment of the White Australia Policy. And once the White Australia Policy came about, which eventually led to the deportation of islanders, but islanders were then legislated out of the sugar industry, and therefore then they had to move into settlements, usually out on the outskirts of town. Occasionally they would find a friendly farmer who would actually allow them to work on their farms and still be involved in the sugar industry, but if those farmers were caught, they would be reported and, you know, their cane wouldn't be sold for as much as other farms that had white labour.
Was the Queensland government involved in any of this? Do they regulate it in any way, or was it totally unregulated?
Yes, there was regulation, so the government was involved. And the regulations got stricter as time went on. And then with the development of the White Australia Policy, there was even more legislation brought out to restrict islanders from actually working in the sugar industry. So islanders were brought out here, they learned how to work in the sugar industry, then the White Australia Policy came along, which then restricted them from being in the sugar industry, and so therefore they had to find other ways of living. But basically, after the White Australia Policy came out, the legislation made it really difficult for islanders to live off the sugar industry. So they had to find other means of making a living.
Okay. But during that time, that 40-odd years at the end or the second half of the 19th century, we had them being brought from the Pacific Islands, South Sea Islands to Australia. Were they bought or sold once they got here? Was it a situation like we would have seen in the southern United States with slavery? What was the going price for an islander?
There is talk And I myself just talking from a community perspective, but there, I have heard stories of people saying, you know, the ancestors being sold like cattle off a ship. But what prices people were sold for, I could not tell you. Yeah.
Okay. Was there any resistance to it, either amongst the white people of Queensland who thought that this was a barbaric trade, or amongst the Pacific Islanders, South Sea Islanders themselves, when the ship came to collect these people, either willingly or unwillingly, was there any resistance to that?
Definitely missionaries in the islands were resisting the trade, and they had, and there's been reports written from a missionary point of view about how they felt about the trade of islanders. And then the islanders themselves, I think as time went on, people became familiar with the boats and eventually later on were making informed, when I say informed in inverted commas, decisions about coming out to Australia to work in the sugar.
They knew what the work was like because people had gone across and come back and told them about it.
Yes, but they were also coming back with, you know, trade items,
right,
you know, axes and guns. And so all this kind of trade interaction started with islanders who were returning back to the villages.
Right.
So there was a whole, you know, economy, so what you could say, that was starting to happen.
Okay.
So people could see this benefit and deciding to come out to Australia, yeah.
Imelda Miller is our guest from Queensland Museum about the blackbirding trade in Australia in the 19th century. So one of the stories told with Mal Meninga's great-grandfather was that he actually, along with some friends, dived into the water and swam out to the ship because he wanted to go to Queensland, wanted to go to Australia to experience this life. Was that common?
I think there was a curiosity, and also it's probably, you need to remember also, there had been other ships previously sailing into the Melanesian Islands, if you like to refer to all those islands in that way, coming in and working and going into the pearling industry and doing things and doing other industry areas like that. And so people are sort of familiar with it, but what they thought were happening at the other end of that, I'm not too sure.
Right.
And I'm surprised, like young people today,
they're adventurous. They want to go and see the world. Exactly.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Maybe they thought there was a better world out there.
Did a lot of them or most of them come back?
There was a lot of people deported after the White Australia policy came about and ordered deportation of islanders. But after that, there was something about over 1,000 islanders still left in Australia and who chose to stay here. But there was islanders also campaigned against being deported back to the islands. So
they wanted to stay here.
There were people who wanted to stay here and for various reasons, whether they had been here for a long time. They had made lives here. They
got
had
married,
family.
Children.
Got married here. Yeah. They had children here. They married into local Indigenous communities here. And so, therefore, they had established this life and they wanted to stay. And they were doing well in the sugar industry, some of them, you know. So they set about campaigning to stay and some were able to stay, but the others were returned home.
So these days we have a very different approach to what would be described as racism. What about during that time in the mid to late 19th century? Was this seen as a form of racism or slavery, or was it just seen as an opportunity to get cheap labour and that was just the way that the business operated?
Yes, I think there's a lot of different ways to look at it, Rod. I think you bring up a couple of good points.
But what was the prevailing view of society, the wider Australian society?
I think people saw it as a cheap form of labour. These people were working from, you know, sun up to sun down in very hot conditions and on a diet that was foreign to them, not on their island food, and also in conditions that living in conditions that were not like that of the islands. So, you know, you had people from different islands living together.
Right.
You had a whole heap of people together who necessarily wouldn't eat together. but they learned the way to get along, and they also created pigeons, so they were able to talk to one another.
Okay. But I'm thinking also that around about the time this trade started was when slavery came to an end in the US. And we hear a lot about the end of slavery in the United States. However, it seems as though in Australia we were only too happy to proceed with the same sort of thing. Or do you look at this and think, well, it was cheap labour, in some cases it was forced labour, but it wasn't really like what was going on with the slave trade elsewhere?
I believe that it was very like the conditions in America. However, many would debate with me on that fact. But, you know, the fact whether people understood what they were entering into, you know, is what did they fully, you know, understand
did they have
what
a
contract
even?
Is. Did they, yeah, did they have a choice? Did they understand what they were, where they were going? Did they understand how long it would take them to get to Australia and the conditions that they would be living on those ships? And when they got here, you know, what kind of belongings did they have once they arrived, and how were they going to survive when they got here?
Okay, and the trade, or there's the cane-cutting business, is not a year-round business. What happened to them during the time when they weren't required to cut the cane?
They were you know, they're making lives for themselves. Right. They're being on other farms, but then they're also going, you know, finishing up their contracts. They're going back to the island, or they're staying here and making lives for themselves and finding, you know, growing market gardens and trying to survive in the meantime.
Okay. To what extent do you think that this trade led to the White Australia policy?
I think they had a big part in the development of the White Australia policy. They were becoming very successful in the sugar industry, and islanders were starting to get very good jobs. And I think some of the other labour, the white labour, were starting to find they didn't agree with this, and therefore they wanted to bring about the, you know, bring White Australia back into power, basically.
So same thing that we hear now, they're taking our jobs. That's what was being said 100 years ago, more than 100 years ago.
Yes, it's ironic that we'd be having these similar conversations all over again, isn't it?
I don't know. I just think history repeats itself. As it turned out, the White Australia policy lasted a little bit longer than the blackbirding slave trade, didn't it?
Yes, that's right, yes. I mean, that was a racist policy, basically, wasn't it? So how people lived after that, you know, the legislation that was brought about really was probably even more discriminating than and had more exploitation of islanders than actual the blackbirding of islanders coming out to Queensland.
You know, I talked to quite a few people after I saw this episode of the program, and most had no idea about it. Why do you think it is that this part of Australian history hasn't been talked about more? Is it because we're ashamed of it?
I think, yes, there's a part of, you know, our history that people don't want to admit to, that we had this slave-like labour here in Australia. It's not taught in schools. Until we start educating in schools about real Australian history, you know, these other stories aren't going to be told to people, and people are, you know, it's not accessible to the wider community.
Imelda, I really appreciate your time tonight, and thanks very much.
Thanks very much for your time, Ron. I appreciate it.
And that is Imelda Miller, Assistant Curator, Pacific and Torres Strait Islander Studies at Queensland Museum. Well, that's another podcast from ABC Local Radio Overnights. I'm Rod Quinn. Thanks for listening.